Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Jans, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers in the insurance industry and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. Today's conversation is a fun one. Super high energy and, again, a new friend of mine. Many of my podcast guests are longtime friends, have been in the industry 25 years. Now, this guy was a child 25 years ago, and that's kind of what makes it exciting, is from time to time, I really want to know, what are millennials doing in the industry to make it better? Well, here's an example. So I'm going to be introducing you to David Schwendeman. And like a lot of young agents, which is how he started out in the industry, he was struggling and not making sales. And he was following the recipe that was given to him. And frankly, it was just too old school and was not getting him the results that he wanted. He made a change, a relatively simple change, but very powerful, and that changed everything, and then he shot to the top. He was in a captive company, and so obviously they monitored his performance very carefully, and he then quickly went from zero to number one. It was a standard P&C agency, but number one in life sales for them. Number one as a rookie in commercial sales for them, and then he went on to become a trainer. His group of 180 agents that he trained became the fastest growing group out of 13,000 that were tracked. So when I heard the story, I got excited about it. We connected, had some great conversations, and we narrowed this conversation down to three things. Number one, a very clean six-step process to fill your lead funnel. This one is, I think, of particular interest to commercial agents. The second thing we covered is probably of particular interest to every agency owner because he helped solve a problem for some of his clients, which is when the CSRs don't sell enough. For those of you who want to hang with me for a short afterward, after the podcast, I have a couple of things that I want to say about that. So that's the second thing we cover is how he got, basically how he got a CSR who did not sell anything for 5 years to sell 34 policies her first month after trying this technique. Okay, so that should get you excited. And then I specifically dove into the millennial question. What do millennials want from the insurance industry, and how should an agency respond to that? So that's the stuff that we cover. I think this is a practical tactical. I do like to balance my podcasts between big strategic thinking, because I think that's we need to now. In times of turbulence, you need to be very strategic, and you need to pick your tactics carefully to fit in and align with your strategic direction. So this is a practical tactical one, kind of balances that big thinking. And essentially, I'm giving you three nuggets. David is giving you three nuggets. One, two, three, and put them to work as it's appropriate for your agency. So, again, if you want to hang with me briefly afterwards, happy to share a couple of insights about my experience working with CSRs. And now, without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce you to David Schwendeman. David Schwendeman, thanks so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right. As I said in my introduction, you have an area of expertise. You've got a background and a history in your young career as as a remarkably successful insurance agent and then insurance agent trainer, and you have now followed your passion and you're training independently. You're not training in or within the context of the company that you used to work for. Why don't we start? Little thumbnail sketch of what you do, who you are, other than the fact that you are the 912th most fit person on the planet.
Right.
Okay. For our listeners, that's my reference to the fact that I guess David just ranked as number 912 in the CrossFit competition. And what, there are 44,000 that are registered for it or something?
In my division, yeah.
Okay. And you're, so congratulations to you on that. Thanks. And so let's start. I'll ask you to introduce yourself to our audience, at least those who haven't met you before, because you were a guest on a webinar for Agency Revolution.
A few weeks ago, we had a panel.
Yeah. And now we got really great feedback on that. And I was particularly intrigued, as you and I have gotten to know each other, about a couple of the concepts that you used first for your success and now for the success of your clients. So I'm going to ask you to just give that stuff away for free.
Totally.
All right. So how'd you get to be where you are now?
So right from, I'll give the very briefest of examples. I've owned a number of businesses. I've owned six businesses so far, including the agency. I got into insurance, though, when my contracting business went under in 2010. And I'd never sold before, and I had, no one was hiring back then, so I was just scrounging, and I saw an ad on Craigslist for Farmers Insurance recruiting new agents and showed up for the interview, and it turns out that the trick to getting hired was showing up for the interview. So I knocked that out of the park.
Yeah, right.
they brought me on as what they call a reserve agent, so I was working commission only. They provided some sales training, and I was just off to the races, just cold calling 8 hours a day. And in the first 2 months doing this, I'd managed to line up no policies and made no money. And I was really thinking, geez, I'm going to...
This is working out really well.
Thought, gosh, I got to figure something out. And so I really just looked at how I was selling and how I was trained to sell, and it didn't feel comfortable for me. It wasn't working, and I thought I gotta do something different. And I started calling some really good agents and just interviewing some of the top people in the company and getting some ideas there. But what I really found was my love in insurance was the same as my love when I was working as a contractor, which was just to find ways to help people. Like, I liked making a difference in people's lives, and it felt counterintuitive to how I was trained to sell, which was this cold call, this kind of a move the conversation to a place where the person has to say yes, kind of, you know, maneuvering the whole time. And I thought, well, that's not working for me. So I'm just gonna go with what feels really good, which is talking to people, learning about what's going on in their life, finding some way I can have an impact and help them, and let the chips fall where they may. I'm not making money doing it the other way, so I'll just do it this way. And 5 months later, I was number two in the state of Oregon for selling life insurance, and I was the top rookie producer for commercial insurance in the state. So something had started to work by changing my approach there.
All right. Well, inquiring minds want to know.
How did you go
from zero to being number one in two categories in what period of time? In less than a year, right?
In five months.
You got. Okay.
Yeah, so. And I'll just say before we talk about this, like, I've taken this to my clients, and we talked about this, what size of agency would benefit from this approach, and I've used it with, I've worked with a guy over in Idaho who's the 10th biggest agent in all of Farmers, and I've used it with brand new agents who are just getting off the ground, and it works equally well. It's just a matter of scaling it. So,
got it.
So this process has worked across the board. It's just a matter of are you doing it just yourself, or are you handing it off to staff and teaching your staff how to do what I did as an agent? So it works in both senses. But my big secret to success. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, just to kind of put this in context, I think this is a tactical, practical technique probably leans more towards commercial lines and personal lines and less.
Yeah, for sure.
But frankly, as a general principle, it works everywhere. Okay, I mean, there's an underlying psychology that is universal. The economics of it work probably well where the commission, you know, justifies the output. But the psychological principle, I think this would work anywhere, and using technologies, you certainly can use this principle. So let's give it a name. What do you have a name for this principle, this concept?
I didn't ever package it up, but I just tell people when I'm coaching someone new, I say the way I'm going to teach you to sell is through service. All of our sales is going to be based on serving somebody. We're going to find ways to help people.
Okay.
That's how we're going to sell.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. By the way, and I'll remind our listeners of the podcast that I had with Umberto Fidelli, who has a few more years under his belt than you do, David. Right. Owns probably the largest single owner privately owned agency in the country, and really his entire premise, his entire philosophy is based on, you know, something very similar to what you're talking about. It's solving problems for other people. It's always looking for a way to serve them, even, right, and he emphasizes this a lot, even if the problem isn't insurance related, if you have a solution, then deliver that solution. So I'll remind listeners who haven't heard that podcast, go back and dig it up and find the similarities between what Umberto did so successfully and what David has done successfully in different worlds, but I think very similar concept. So tell us.
Oh, you're spot on.
Yeah. Tell us what you did here.
Yeah, so my goal with any connection, if I'm cold calling businesses, which I still will do in terms of growing my coaching practice, or when I was selling insurance, is first I just connect with someone, and the entire goal in that connection is to find a way to help this person, to learn enough about their world and their life to see if there's something that I can offer, whether or not it's in the field of insurance. And this is where it gets scary when I start teaching this to new people, because they start wondering, how am I going to make any money if I'm just helping people buy a new car, or I'm helping someone find a good orthodontist for their kid? Like, that, I don't see how that's going to come back to me. And so there's a little bit of a trust here that has to be taken. But at the end of the day, when I just find ways to help everyone I talk to, they find ways to hire me.
Okay.
And I've had people do that with insurance.
All right. Sure. So hang on a second. All right. I'm going to interrupt you because that's my job.
Good.
So I want to dissect this process enough so that pretty much anybody can just go take it and use it. So I want to sort of back up to the very beginning. How do you find the person that you're making contact with?
Right. Good. So if we're starting right from there, let's say I've got a commercial producer or a marketer, and I want them to get me to the decision maker. That's honestly just I cold call right out the bat. I would pick a business. I call whoever answers the phone. My script goes something like, hey, my name is Dave Schwendeman. I'm with Farmers Insurance. Listen, you're probably not the right person to talk to, but I'm hoping you can help me out. I'm trying to get a hold of whoever would be in charge of the insurance for your business or your restaurant here. But like I said, I honestly wouldn't know who to talk to. I was hoping you could point me in the right direction.
Okay.
And I just want to get whoever I'm talking to onto my side. I literally had an agent I coached last week. I said, that's the approach. Go do that this afternoon. Let me know how it goes. And he texted me about an hour later and said, I have 3 new expiration dates. And this is the guy who has not been able to get traction in commercial for 7 years.
Got it.
And,
all right. So you're recruiting allies, because you're going to run into gatekeepers a lot right now. So I want to back up even farther. Okay. How do you select the list, or where do you get the list? So now you know who to call. I mean, you got to push buttons on a phone. How do you know who to reach?
So there's two ways to do it. One is, in my mind, to find something you're just really passionate about, and I just love working with this type of person. So if there's a certain industry I've got background in or I really like, we can go that way. My way to do it as an agent, honestly, was where are the biggest commissions being paid and where is the close ratio the highest? And then I would start with those. Those are my first two filters.
But how did you get that information?
Farmers gave us this. I kind of had it. I had it handed to me. But if I was an independent agent, I would call up a broker that I knew did the kind of accounts I wanted, and I would ask them, where do you guys pay the most commission? If I was to go with you, what policies pay the most commission, and where are your close rates the highest? Policies written.
Or call your primary carriers and see what's hot. Okay,
they want you to close business. They're going to be happy to give me that information. So they want me to close more of that stuff because it's obviously profitable for them.
All right. Okay, so fairly simple formula on your end. You found out where the biggest where the biggest and easiest money is. Okay.
That's it. It's so funny. I'm not a guy. I don't have a lot of ego around. I have to do it myself and be totally independent. I would much rather find where someone else has figured out how to crack this code and then use their hard work to make my life easier.
That's
how I do most of my stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I find my niche or my market I'm going after that way. I didn't ever have it be too broad, one or two industries max, where I went after.
Right.
Then that phone call, like I said, recruit my ally. They would then help me get through to the owner. And once I talk to the owner, I say, listen, I always kind of self-deprecating when I call a lot of salespeople that I've tried to coach. And when they struggle, it's when they try and come across too much as an expert or they got it together right away. It can be off-putting to the person we're talking to. So when I would call and get a hold of the owner, and again, knowing I'm younger and I'm going to sound younger on the phone, it was if I'm talking to a guy, Dan, who owns a guy, Dan, who owned a Denny's restaurant, and I called him up, Dan, Dave Schwendeman with Farmers, listen, I know I'm calling out of the blue. I know I'm interrupting your day, so I'm going to be super quick here. I just wanted to figure out when your policy renewed so I can reach back out to you closer to that date when it will be when you're already thinking about this stuff. And in the meantime, anything you want to you can share with me about your business or your life, I just would love to learn more about who I'm working with, make sure we'd be a good fit. So if you got 2 minutes, I'd love to hear, starting with, like, how long have you been in business? And just start talking. And people want to talk about themselves. So when I got the business out of the way quickly and then could ask something like that, or what's the biggest headache? Like, how you've owned this Denny's restaurant. What's that been like? How'd you get into it? Like, I just get them talking about something they're passionate about, and they drop little hints in there about areas that I can help with. Whether it's, what's the hardest part? Man, my employees. You know, keeping good people is so tough. Right there, I think of the book Revved, which is a book about managing and inspiring your employees. So I would make a note as I'm taking notes, talking to this guy, get him a copy of that book. Or if he talks about, you know, the hardest part is our staff just don't make as much money as they want to. There's a great video on YouTube about how wait staff can increase tips. So I would send him that and say, watch this, teach your staff about this. So
it
was always in that conversation looking for what can I get this guy that would really help him out.
So let me ask you a question about that one. What do you think what was your hit ratio? What percentage of expiration dates did you get from those phone calls?
So I'll tell you, in the 5 months I was an agent, when I eventually got recruited to go up and start training and recruiting new agents, in that 5 months from when I kind of decided to take this route to leaving, I had 185 commercial X dates sitting in my queue. These are policies I hadn't signed, and I was already the top producing, like I said, rookie agent for commercial.
All right.
It was the easiest thing in the world. I do a little game when I go coach one-on-one with someone, with a client who's having trouble with commercial. I say, just pick a name. I say, pick any business you want. I'll call them right now, and I'll show you how this works. And I have them. They usually want to show off to me, so they pick a really tough one. I'll say, this guy won't talk to anybody. And I pick up the phone and I call and I show them just how easy it is. Oftentimes we get through to the boss and I get the X date, and then I say, there it is. Like, took us 3 minutes, and now we have an X date on the hardest client in your book. So what's next?
Got
it. It's just not that hard. When I take this approach and really embody it of I'm just looking to help, there's no way to lose.
Okay, so we're by the way, I am also taking notes here, and I've got us on. We've got so far three steps.
Yeah.
The list, the gatekeeper, the owner conversation. Now there's a step four.
Yeah.
What's step four?
So step four. This is where I automated this thing. Because even as an agent with 185 X states,
yeah.
This was going to get unwieldy very quickly. And when I work with agents that have staff, we want to make sure we can have a process or a system. So as soon as I collected the info, who do I need to talk to? So who owns the business or who's making the decision? And what's a problem that I've uncovered or an idea of something I could help them with? That was on me. At that point, I would hand the rest off to my CSR.
Okay.
So from there, what we would do is if I uncovered something I could help them with that would lead to me sending them a book. There's a great book on restaurants by Danny Meyer I might send. Or,
right.
or like I said, the book Revved on how to help inspire your employees.
So you're
making note.
Am I jumping? One of your niches was restaurants?
That's just an easy one.
Okay.
High close ratios
right.
and the commissions were good. So
okay.
I went after them.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so you handed it over. What was the thing that got automated here?
Yeah. So what was automated was here's the business, here's the person we're talking to, here's what I want to send them. And so I had a library. I would go on Amazon and buy these books in bulk. So I just had like four or five different titles that I used for almost all my clients. So I'd have a book prepped. It's kind of sitting there in the office. And so my CSR then would get the info on the business, the owner, and what book I wanted to send them. Or if it was an audio program or if it was a YouTube video, so you would have all that there. And I preferred books because tangible is gonna make such a bigger impact than something digital. So if I could,
well, it's sitting. Well, first of all, the guy coughed up his X date, and he was probably did it as a way to just like let's get this over with, right? Get you off the phone. And now he's got a gift and probably a thank you note or some kind of a note from you, right?
Yep.
Sitting on his desk for how many weeks or how many months before the expiration date actually rolls around. And of course now, sure. Okay. So step number four is the delivery of the gift, right?
Yes.
And
so what happened was it was the name of the guy that the gift I wanted to send. And then I had kind of a canned note. I had a note that was typed up and it was real short. And my CSR would take this note. So, dear Dan, great to talk to you today. Really looking forward to connecting in August, 2 months before your renewal. In the meantime, this book has been really helpful for my clients who have staff and need to keep their staff motivated. Hope you enjoy it. Looking forward to connecting. And then my name and contact info at the bottom. All of that handwritten. So I would have her handwrite this note. The only thing she wouldn't do was the signature. I would sign on my own, and then I would get it back to her. So I'd show up in the morning, and I'd have a stack of books with notes on them sitting on my desk. And I'd go through, and I'd sign them all and slip the notes inside. And then she'd come back, and she'd pick them all up. She would address the envelope. She'd get them all packaged, and then she would drop them in the mail for me. So once this system was done, the only thing I had to worry about was getting her the info and then making sure I signed everything.
Got it. All right.
She would do the rest.
So it went out right away. Is that right?
Yeah.
No need to wait.
There's something called my coach calls it this, the half-life of enthusiasm. No one's going to be more excited to talk to me or I'm not going to be as top of mind. The minute I leave that phone call, that initial phone call, they start forgetting me. And so I want to get something in front of them as quickly as possible.
That's really interesting. Okay, the half-life of enthusiasm. Yeah, no, nobody's enthusiasm for a possible insurance agent. It doesn't go up over time. It's like two weeks later, they can't get you out of their mind.
Okay. Yeah, it's very low to begin with. So I want to do something to kind of bump that up and keep myself top of mind for them.
All right.
It might be 8 months before I'm going to talk to them again.
Okay.
So,
yeah, right. Okay.
Out.
So it could be eight. All right. So now there's a step number five, right?
Step number five is the note to let them know I'll be reaching out.
That goes with the book, right? That's with the book.
It does.
All right. So that's step number four.
I have them both done at once.
Okay.
So I would, in step four, we send the book out, but I'd also have the CSR prep a note of hey, it's 2 months before your renewal. I'll be calling you next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the same time, she would just prepare
I would prep them at the same time. Yeah. And the second note was filed away. I had a filing cabinet dedicated to these letters, just done by date. So it was every month out of the year would it was all, you know, January through December was in there, and we just fill it with notes, and then
let me ask you a question here. As a fan of technology, it would seem that you probably could just use a physical tickler file for this, right?
It would have been great. Like I said, this, and when I was developing this as an agent, I really wanted, it was me kind of creating this system from scratch. I didn't have any access to anything that I really felt like could deliver that personal touch. The key to this whole thing is helping and making it feel personal. And that's what got me indoors that other agents couldn't get through.
Okay.
Was people getting handwritten notes from me at the right time.
So let's say they got the gift book in March, and their expiration date, let's say, is in October. Okay. So 2 months before that, in August, you're sending them another, you're sending them a note.
Yeah.
And the note is, hey, it's, you know, your expiration date's coming up in a couple of months. Okay. So they get the note. And so then what happens after the note?
So the note would actually have the day and time of my phone call, which was great because it would let me schedule things out. I'd say, all right, Greg, so it looks like, hey, Greg, Dave Schoenman with Farmers again. As you requested, we're going to be setting up a phone call coming up in the next week to talk about your policy renewing. I'll be reaching out on Tuesday at 3 p.m. If that time or date doesn't work for you, please call me back at, and we can reschedule it.
Okay.
So short and sweet.
So in step number three, where you got the X date, you at least got some soft permission for them to say, yes, give me a call next fall.
Yeah, totally.
Okay,
my whole premise was, I'm bothering you. I don't want to try and get your try and get you a quote now. That would be too much to ask, but I'd love to call you back 2 months before your renewal.
Okay.
And like you said, they're so excited just to get me off the phone that they'd say, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, call me in 6 months. I don't care. And because then they could just move on with their day. But now I have that permission to call them back.
Okay. So, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. Get off the phone. I have staffing issues to deal with.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So
I want to leverage that. That actually works in my favor if I recognize.
Yeah. All right. So now I'm going to call this step number six. It's Tuesday at 3 o'clock, and you're calling them, and presumably they've been pretty well primed. I mean, there's a lot of kind of an implied social contract. You know, there's a little bit of a relationship, of course, law reciprocity. Yep. You gave them something really valuable, and you were the first one to do it, and so there's a little bit of social indebtedness, and they made an agreement that it seems that you reference in your note. You know, like I said, I was going to reach out to her. We agreed to a phone call. So you're referencing a social contract, and now Tuesday 3 o'clock rolls around. Do you know roughly what's the show-up ratio for that phone call?
That's so fun. This part's the best, because when I send that second note, a lot of the time I would get a call at my office before the scheduled appointment. And they would call and say, hey, Dave, I got your letter. You listen, Tuesday at 3 doesn't work, but can we talk now? Can we just talk now?
Got it. Okay.
So they would the coolest thing about this whole process is there is that reciprocity, but they also, I've just been sending out notes, and this is a full system for me. The customer, the client receiving all this, feels like I'm putting a lot of time and energy into the relationship. They really feel like they know me at this point. And so if it got to Tuesday at 3 and I did call, I wouldn't be able to get past my first name. Hey, it's David. And then they would interrupt me and say, David, I got your book.
Yeah.
I got your note.
Uh-huh.
How do you find the time to send these out to everybody? And I would always, my favorite thing was, well, listen, I only do it to those customers I'm really excited to work with and those people who I really think I can help. And they were just blown away that in their mind, I'm spending all day handwriting notes to everybody. and they couldn't figure out how I had time to do all of this. So it really landed as such a genuine approach of I'm really wanting to help you. And they were so ready to have that conversation at that point.
All right.
It was great.
Okay. So is I don't know if there's any magic after that. So my presumption is, your sales, accelerated very quickly. And so my presumption is that you laid the groundwork of really good positive psychology in that relationship, and that then permission to quote and closing ratio was high.
So in my mind, it was 100%. I mean, I'm sure there was ones that I didn't, but in my mind, if it didn't work out this year, it was simply a matter of timing or price, and I was going to come back every year from then on, and we'd continue the conversation until eventually it worked. The trick was getting someone who wanted to hire me. Like, these people wanted to find an excuse to work with me at this point. There wasn't sales resistance.
Uh-huh.
Which is what we struggle with mostly, or what I struggled with mostly.
Got it. All right.
If I could get the sales resistance down, the policy was going to be written. It was just a matter of when.
I'm gonna encapsulate or summarize the 6-part system. Okay.
Great.
All right.
Yeah.
So tell me if I got this right. Step one, generate the list, and you used my notes say B and E. So it's not breaking and entering. It's where the big money and easy money is. So in other words, the commissions were justify it, and the closing ratio is statistically high. So it's the B&E method of list selection. Step number two, reach out to the gatekeeper, the purpose for which is to get contact information for the owner. Step number three is reach out to the owner. And the purpose there is probably twofold. One, to get the expiration date. And two, to identify a problem that you might be able to provide some solution for, right? So you listen very carefully, and they drop hints about what kind of problems they've got. Step number four is largely delegated to somebody on the team, and that is the gift. And the gift, what I thought was interesting is you said you had 4 or 5 like books or whatever, right?
So,
generally, if you approach an industry, you'll discover everybody's got like there are 4 or 5 problems, and that pretty much takes care of 80 or 90% of every problem, right? So you know what they are, okay? So there's the staffing, or there's the marketing, and that is accompanied with a note. And the note references the conversation that you had. Step number five takes place 60 days prior to the expiration date, and in it, you're reaching out, reminding them of the relationship, and reminding them of their agreement to have another conversation with you, right? And then step number six is you have that conversation, and that happens probably it's like the next week. Right? It's within.
Yeah. Okay. As soon as you can.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Great system. Now, there's another thing that you have taught your agencies, which has been really successful. And I think this is a common problem. I developed a CSR mastery program to, because of this problem, and Agency Revolution still has that available, the problem is, quote, my CSRs don't want to sell, or CSR says, I love service and I like to take care of people, but I'm not a salesperson and I wasn't hired to be a salesperson, right? And yet for the agency, that CSR or the CSR team often has far more conversations and contact, interaction with the client base than anybody and everybody else combined. And each one of those is an opportunity for a sale. But if there's sales resistance, then it's like we're throwing the ball, the income ball, to somebody downfield who just doesn't want to run, right? And so that's a problem. You had a solution that worked really well. So tell us what you did.
Yeah. So I have the same exact thing. The CSRs are CSRs for a reason. They aren't salespeople or producers, or we would have hired them for that.
Right.
So getting them in, what I found was I was trained to incentivize CSRs through money. Like, I'll pay you big parts of the commission if you'll sell, but it's the money was never enough to overcome the anxiety they had around sales,
right.
Their own fear around selling. So I was once tasked with working with a CSR who hadn't sold anything in 5 years. and told me up front on our first coaching session, do not try and make me a salesperson. I'll quit. I don't want to sell. And I said to her, I'm not going to make you sell. I don't want you to sell either, because that sounds really uncomfortable for you. And I took out a piece of, I always take notes on some notebook paper, a spiral notebook. I tore a sheet out, and I drew a little T-chart, so a vertical line and a horizontal line across the top. Mm-hmm. And on the left-hand side, I wrote the word no at the top of it. On the right-hand side, I wrote the word yes. And I said, you don't have to sell ever, but what I'm going to ask you to do is for 10 people a week, 10 conversations that you have, for someone that doesn't have a product that we could offer, I want you to get them on either the no column or the yes column. And I said, both are equal in terms of value. Yes isn't any more valuable than no. And in fact, no is great because it means you never have to talk to this person again. You don't have to deal with them. Yes actually creates a lot of work.
Yeah,
so I kind of wanted to, you know, just playing with it and spinning it that way. And I said, that's it. So you talk to someone and you see that they have an auto policy but no home. Or you see that we've got business insurance but no life. Anything that, any opportunity that you see, your only job is to say, hey, I noticed that we've got your BOP policy, but we don't have any life or key man insurance on for the business. Is that something we should be talking about? And I said, they're going to say things like, oh, I'm not interested right now, or, oh, I don't think I want that. And they're going to say these things that sound like no. But I said, but unless they say the words to you, no, I do not want that policy, you have to keep asking and making sure that you're hearing them correctly. So when they say, no, I'm not interested right now, her job was to say, that's perfect. And usually when someone says that to me, it means they don't want to talk about it. But just to make sure, is it that you don't want this or you just really don't want it now? And we should talk maybe in 3 months and see if that would be better. And she was blown away by the number of people who said, oh, yeah, I just was busy today. Like, I'd love to have the conversation. I couldn't want to do it right now.
Sell me tomorrow, at Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Okay.
It was amazing. And all we were doing, I said, we're actually doing them a favor. We're letting them tell you what's going on rather than trying to assume for them that we know what they're trying to say. And so the fun ending to this story was the CSR who hadn't sold anything in 5 years sold 34 P&C policies and 10 life policies in 1 month because people kept saying yes when she would confirm that what she thought they were saying, and it turned out she was wrong.
I have to ask you how did she feel about that?
She was. It was really fun. I saved the emails. Her agent was emailing me her emails, her correspondence, going, I can't believe this is happening. Like, she was absolutely floored that she wasn't selling and she kept getting yeses. She had no idea it was that easy to write this business. And it was really fun. So the woman felt empowered, right? She felt good. It wasn't that she hated sales. She just wasn't comfortable with it. So now she's making more money. She feels like she's contributing to the agency, and she was absolutely shocked at how easy it was when we just made it the goal to get an answer, not to get a specific answer. It took all the pressure off of her.
I think I'd mentioned this to you earlier. We had a really similar tactic. Way back, used to teach this in Quantum Club, and some people called it go for the no, and some people called it a buck a no. But basically, it's the same thing. I remember a lot of agents were running this on life insurance because P&C agents seem to just hate to sell life, right? But they also there's magic in it because life insurance has a weirdly powerful way of increasing P&C retention. I can talk about
sticky,
that one
so
later,
sticky.
But it makes customers really sticky. And of course, you know, the paycheck isn't bad year one on it either. But, you know, big agencies, you know, would roll through a year and sell six policies. And I know, you know, in the day, I don't hear this as much anymore, but you know, I could be wrong. A lot of P&C companies who also offer life insurance, you know, they'd make you sell. Yeah, you have to sell six life policies to get on the cruise. Like, you qualify,
right.
You qualify everywhere else, but, you know, and so all of a sudden, boom, they'd sell six policies, and it wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
So anyway, the go for the no principle was the exact same thing, or buck a no was getting, like for a month or a week or whatever, have the CSRs, just get no's. You know, that's all I'm asking you to do. Now, you know, because if you, every time you get a no or somebody says, no, I don't want life insurance, I'll pay you a buck. Now, of course, if they say yes, you know, then, you know, you got to sell them and I'll give you a lot of bucks.
Right.
And it did have a way of just sort of melting the personal or the internal resistance. And then, of course, it helps to surround that with a real cultural paradigm that, the stress is that insurance is about protecting people and taking care of people. So now you can really feel good about what you've done here because, you know, imagine what would happen if, you know, something tragic happened and that family was in such and such a situation. Well, you've just taken care of them. And so people feel good every single way about that. All right. I do have one more question for you. Okay. Yeah. You are young, right?
Yeah.
Millennial. Yeah. And, yeah. This is an industry, the independent side. I had just done some research on this. I think that the average age of the agency principal who has 20% or more ownership or equity in the agency is, I think it's 55 or 57. Okay. And it's just if they have 20%. Reagan and Associates had done this research. It's excellent research, and I think they're coming, I've got an upcoming podcast with them, that if they had 17% ownership, the average age was 67. And, so there is some concern. I wrote about this somewhat extensively in my State of the Industry report. This is the millennial generation is the biggest generation in the country. A critical question when somebody embraces or engages in strategy for their business is where are we going to play? Well, clearly, if we're going to be in the business for more than a couple of years, we have to learn to play in the millennial pool. They're buying homes, they're buying cars, they're owning businesses and starting businesses, and so they're obviously the serious consumer of the future. And so we need to know how to be in relationship with them in a way that earns their trust and earns their business and earns their loyalty. So what would you say to a generation that is currently leaning older to about their relationship with the millennials and how to attract them?
There's two things that I work on with this, and my clients always resist me at first until the money starts coming in, and then they embrace it a little more fully, which is the first piece I have to know is millennials, people of my generation and younger, we grew up digital. So we're comfortable online, we're comfortable on social media, we're also very aware of when we're being marketed to. And so when I see a lot of agents on Facebook or even Instagram, and there's these posts that are they just smell of marketing, and I just either
like the insurance agent who jumps on LinkedIn and says we can save you money on insurance, right?
Yeah, and even some of the pseudo helpful things, like make sure that if I go on your Facebook and I see every post is something insurance related trying to help me out, it just feels like, oh, you're just here to market. Like, I want to, and the way I have my agents do it is I want to know that you're a real person.
Yeah.
If you're going to
engage
on social media, share something that makes me feel like I know who you are is number one. Don't try to be so professional that you can't get anywhere. And then the other piece is have fun. Like, we're online to be entertained. Like, I want something that makes me laugh. I want something that's fun to watch. Like, I will take my clients who are marketing towards business people and CEOs and have them do things that feel silly. Have them do things that feel, make little videos, a little personal video for someone. I had a client who was marketing to a large cleaning company, in Montana, and she said, I can't get them to call me back. And I said, let's make a video of you doing a horrible job cleaning the office and talk about how badly you need someone like them and how you think you could help them out as well. And she did, and it was a crack up. It was unprofessional, and they loved it. The company thought it was great, and they started connecting right away.
All right.
So we want to playful and don't market us, because we can tell when we're being marketed to.
Got it.
So have fun. Don't take yourself so seriously, and we'll connect with you.
So a big element, it seems, based on what you're saying and my own research, is that with that generation,
I
think it's fairly universal.
The
critical issue is more about the who than the what. Trust is given from a person to a person, not a person to a policy. And we want to move them through the policy, but they have to go through us first as people. And they want to be able to trust us. And there does seem to be considerable research that with that generation, let's say more than others, everybody cares about trust. But that's a generation that has been hurt and has gone, you know, we could talk about this for a bit. But trust is very critical and yet very interesting. And I cite this in my State of the Industry report. There is some research that says that is a generation that is once they give their loyalty, they're the most loyal of all generations. In other words, if in fact they have made the decision, a millennial's made the decision that I can trust you, then they will be almost undyingly loyal. Because it's that issue of trust, those antenna about being marketed to. They're very wary about that. And so that if they can connect with you as a real person, then that goes a long way. And this kind of flies in the face of a myth about digital technology. You know, some people still think that digital technology, comes across, it impersonalizes you. and that's just the wrong approach. It can amplify that sense of humanity if you can continue to deliver delight and connect as a human to human. All right, David, before we're done, I do want to ask if our listeners want to reach out to you, find out more about what you do or have a conversation, or maybe you're going to send them a free book. I don't know.
Like I said, I got everything is free. I got audios. I have scripts. Everything we talked about today, I give it away.
If they share their problem with you, they may end up with a free book. All right.
They'll get a solution.
They'll get a solution. All right. How can people find you?
Yeah, I think it's funny we're talking social media. Facebook is the biggest way I connect with clients. And outside of that, it's email. So if we're going to list my email in some kind of in a bio or something for the podcast, they can email me. Otherwise, David Schwendeman Coaching on Facebook is where almost all clients that aren't referrals come from. They find me on social media because I post so much of this for free online. People go and grab resources and then reach out when they need more.
Okay. So your Facebook, your name, is it Dave or David? Is that how people, how would people find?
I think it's David Schwendeman.
Schwendeman. Okay. S-C-H-W-E-N-D-I-M-A-N. And your email address
is dave@davidschwendeman.com. So D-A-V-E.
Dave@davidschwendeman.com. All right. Dave, this has been a ton of fun. And I like balancing my podcast interviews with, clearly with, the trends and the forces that are affecting the industry. And I expect my guests to be students of the industry and to pay it, take it very, very seriously. But also, I love it when we can deliver practical tacticals. And so I thank you for that congratulate you on your success. Well done for a young person. Congratulations for you. And
thanks.
Next time we talk, maybe you'll be even fitter than the 912th.
Okay. I'll work on that.
All right. Good to talk to you, and perhaps see you next time. I'm in Bend, Oregon. I didn't tell people that you're from Bend. So,
right. Yeah. All right. Well, when I retired, this is where I had to move. So.
Oh, okay. No other place would have you. All righty.
Yeah.
All right. Dave, have a terrific day, and thanks so much
Thank
for joining
so
us
much.
Today.
This you
bet.
Been great.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Hello again, Michael Janz with a very brief afterword. I wanted to zero in on something that David talked about, which is this problem of CSRs simply not wanting to sell. And agency owners wanting them to sell. It must be 15 or more years ago that I finally addressed that problem head on and created the CSR Mastery Program. And I want to introduce you to a couple of concepts and strategies that worked really, really well and have been transformative. And they really provided the kind of the philosophical foundation of the CSR Mastery Program. So I'm going to share it with you now quite openly, and because I think this is important for everybody who has a team. I recall a conversation that I had with a longtime client who at some point he came up to me and he said, Michael, I finally get it. And he was running an agency that was growing double digits every single year, good-sized agency, lots of commercial insurance, and so he and a nice mix of personal lines business and small commercial lines business. And I said, what do you get? And he said, I realize that I spend, I have weekly sales meetings with my commercial lines producers. I go out on calls with them periodically. I provide intense training to the new producers that I bring in. I hold them all accountable for their behaviors and for their results. And yet, my CSRs handle more business than the producers do. I never talk to them about sales. I never talk to them about account rounding. I never talk to them about techniques to boost retention. And they handle, you know, if you think about this, they're handling more business and more business opportunity. There's so much of the income of the agency is in the hands of people who philosophically may or may not be in alignment with the interests of the agency or the interests of, in some cases, the consumer. I'll talk about that in a moment, and the interests of the agency owner. So, number one, I want to address this. So the fundamental foundation of what I did when I built the CSR Mastery Program is I recognized that there can be a legitimate difference in values, that typically for many CSRs, the value is not sales or even, you know, the motivating value is an increased income. If it was, maybe they actually would have gone into production or some other field of work. But it seems that the overwhelming value for so many CSRs is the desire to take care of people. That's what they want to do. They care about their people like a shepherd cares about their flock, and they want to take care of them. And so we started the first conversation, the fundamental philosophical, the floor plan for the CSR Mastery Program was what I called the principle of belief. And we entered into a conversation about the value of insurance and what happens when people don't have it, how much suffering and pain they can have when they could have been protected and they weren't protected with any kind of insurance, whether it's commercial, personal, life insurance, and how CSRs would feel if somebody had a claim and they weren't protected, but you had a conversation with them a year ago or a month ago or a quarter ago and had the opportunity to engage in a conversation with them that could have saved them so much pain. And we really talked about how important insurance is and how much it helps individuals, it helps companies, it helps families, it helps people have some peace of mind, and that it's really our job. That if we believe, this is the principle of belief, if we believe what we do is important, and that's critical. It's having those discussions in your staff, in your team, in staff meetings about why we do what we do. That's critically important, because ultimately we are here to fulfill a significant social mission of providing protection to people. That's the principle of belief. So once we came to an agreement with the CSRs that what we do is important, then we could talk about our responsibility and feel good about it. Never talked about sales yet. That comes much later. And so then we would find that gap between how people should be protected, what they should have, what protections and policies and coverages they should have versus what they do have. And we'd realize there's a gap. And so now, if in fact we're motivated by that principled belief, we're motivated to fill the gap. And if somebody new calls, a prospect calls, now we've got a not just a sales mission to throw up a line on the whiteboard or to, you know, get whatever the commission is or the bonus is for making a sale, but we've also got another motivation, which is to make sure that that family, that individual, that business is taken care of so that there isn't unnecessary pain and suffering later. Now, the practical application of that principle belief was something I called the law of total client protection, which simply says that every one of our customers should have all of their protection, and they should have it all with us. That's the ideal. And the reason that they should have it with us is, of course, that if they have it with us, it's coordinated in one place. That's critical. And there are three reasons it should be coordinated in one place. One is that if they have a claim and the claim affects more than one carrier, let's say, or more than one policy, and their protections helter-skelter all over the place, that's unnecessarily stressful at a time when life is already stressful. So that's counter to our job of delivering peace of mind. And then, of course, they could be overpaying. You know, they could have unnecessary double coverages if it's helter-skelter all over the place, or they could be underprotected. And so we want to make sure that it's all with us. That's the law of total client protection. It's the best way to provide service. It also turns out, of course, that from a business point of view, if your customers have all of their insurance with you, the more policies they have with you, the retention goes up. If you want to increase your retention, one of the easiest ways to do that is to have more policy per customer count, to increase that policy per customer count. Not only does it seem that retention goes up, but loyalty goes up as it's measured emotionally and psychologically. And as loyalty goes up, of course, retention continues to go up, and they're well positioned to purchase more insurance from you in the future. Research done by Bain some years ago indicated that 59% of highly loyal insurance clients, as measured by a net promoter score, 59% plan to purchase more insurance from their provider in the coming year. So you want to earn that loyalty, because, boom, 6 out of 10 of those guys are going to buy more insurance from you. Of course, we need to maintain the communications. We need to continue to reach out to them and then periodically give them the opportunity to make it easy for them to purchase that insurance from you. So in regards to CSRs, I have discovered, I've now trained thousands, probably more than 10,000 CSRs. I have learned that it's counterproductive to fight their values. They have real values. They carry those values inside themselves. They're bred with those values, and they hold those values dear. And if one of those values is to take care of people, then use the force of that. Use the power of that. Help them see that that we do have a mission, that the work that we do is important, and the best way to fulfill the value of taking care of people is to make sure they have proper protection. That's it. I wanted to share my insights on that. If you have any questions, of course, feel free to reach out to me at michael@agencyrevolution.com. And for now, without further ado, I will wish you a terrific day.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.